Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balaji. Thanks for being here today. It's our first show of 2024. It has been a very interesting month so far. So apologies for not getting this show out the last couple of weeks. Lots of things going on. I'm happy to update you on a number of those to start the show. We have an interview guest this week, so I'm excited about that. We'll talk about the PGA show a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about what's happened so far in the season, kind of in the aggregate. We'll touch a little bit on, I suppose, what's happening or what isn't happening with LIV and the PGA Tour. And Strategic Sports Group and the Saudis and all that stuff. That'll be toward the back end. And like usual, our interview segment will end the program this week. Joe Franken is going to join us from Putt Shack. He is their CEO. And we're going to talk about the experience of Putt Shack, kind of miniature golf. I'm a huge miniature golf fan. What Putt Shack brings to the table that's different, not only as miniature golf, but also as a venue to experience compared to Topgolf or bowling or a whole bunch of other kind of different style in-person experiences. It was a fun conversation, so hopefully you'll enjoy that at the tail end of the show. And we'll also have on our podcast feed, which is over at golfnewsnet.com, or you can search on your site of choice, your platform of choice for podcasts, but on our The Bag Room podcast, we have a great interview around PXG and their new driver. Black Ops, we'll talk about that in that interview. It was a really good conversation from last week, so we'll talk about that on that show as well if you want to listen to some equipment talk. Also want to tell you about our friends at Swanee's. Saw them at the PGA show, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. And it, as I've said to a lot of people, it's one of my favorite meetings, if not one of my favorite moments of the entire year. Because Swanee's started coming to the PGA show about 7 years ago. Four guys with contraband merch. They didn't have a booth. They came down in an RV they got, and they were showing off basically golf flip-flops, golf sandals. And I really liked them, and I promised then to do what I could to try to help them on their journey. And all these years later, they have grown tremendously, and our growth together kind of tracks. Like we've kind of done cool stuff. We've grown in obviously very different ways because they're in the apparel world and I'm in the media world. But they're great guys. Adam and Stang and everybody at Swanee's is just a joy to work with. So you're supporting good people and you're supporting good fashion. So Swanee's.co, use the promo code GolfNewsNet25 and you will save 25% on your first order. You'll also get yourself looking good for quickly coming spring golf season. We had 6 inches of snow here just last week, 2 weeks ago now. And then it rained, and it's all gone, and now it's 60 degrees again. So that might be the only snow we see for 5 years. We haven't seen any for two. We might not see any more for a few more years. But spring is about to, well, spring. And Swanee's has got you covered with great quarter zips. Their hoodies are fantastic. They look great. They feel great. Their polos are wonderful, all kinds of different styles. It's just great stuff, great stuff. Swanee's.co, check them out. So PGA show, right? Went down to the PGA show, and someone asked me how many I've been to. I don't know exactly how many. I know I skipped a few, and I think I first started coming in like 2007 or 8. So somewhere in the area of like 15-ish years, I've been going to the show on and off, probably at least 10. But definitely not 15. And the last couple of years were quite sad, to be truthful. 2022 was really weird. They tried to have a virtual show in 2021, and that was just not good. So 2022, still in the throes of the pandemic to a degree because of a variant that was getting everyone sick. I mean, I even had it before I went to the show, and then I tested positive, missed my flight by a day after I, you know, tested negative. And wound up going down. And hardly anyone was there. I mean, it was nice to see people, nice to kind of start to get back into what felt like a sense of normalcy again, but hardly anyone was there. And I think there was a lot of concern about the future of the show because the golf industry had figured out they didn't necessarily need a trade show to do business because business had been booming. The golf industry was growing. It's still growing. People could just conduct sales meetings on Zoom or Teams or name your app, and they were doing it and were happy with it. And it kind of got the sense like maybe this is kind of the end of the PGA show. Last year was better, right? I mean, COVID is still a part of our lives in ways, but not nearly as prominently. And there were more people, but there were still a lot of open spaces, and a lot of companies were unsure if they wanted to be a part of this and the prices that they can get charged for the week. I still think a lot of companies are unsure about the ROI, but this year, it was very different. The energy was very good from the beginning. Thursday afternoon, there were still people walking around, so the gauge for me is twofold. One, how many people are there when the doors open on Wednesday, which is 9 a.m.? I mean, it's a little earlier than that, but think about 9 a.m. And Thursday at lunchtime, the second day of 2.5 days. Last couple of years and some years before that, by about 12 on Thursday, a lot of people are just done. Like they did their sprint on Wednesday, maybe Thursday morning. They're out of here. And if that happens, it's been a bad show because the foot traffic is not there and brands probably aren't taking quite as many meetings and they probably aren't getting as many passersby. They're just kind of curious. That didn't seem to be the case this year. When I got together with the Swannies guys, I shouldn't say Swannies guys. They have the four guys who founded it, but it's a huge team. I think like 30 or 40 people now, men and women, various ages. So Swannies gang is more appropriate. But when I got together with the Swannies gang, that was 5 p.m. on a Thursday, and there were still lots of people at the show. Now, in part, that was because they had a country singer named Jake Owen, if you're not familiar with him. I've seen him live. He's a great performer. But Jake Owen was going to have a concert that evening. So a lot of people stuck around the convention center because they were going to go to the concert. I would guess a few thousand people wound up showing up, just me eyeballing what I saw. So that may have been something to do with it. But that was just a small percentage of the number of people that came and patronized the show this year. It was really good to see so much interest in golf and just hanging in there, growing. Lots of cool new brands, from apparel to a brand called Kavua. That this 20-year-old kid named Dylan created a training aid when he was in high school and created different versions of it, and then finally got some investment and managed to start making the professional-looking version of it, which is really cool. And stories like that I love about the PGA Show. There are more of those this year. I got they've integrated pickleball and racket sports into part of the convention. Last couple of years, they kind of had it way off to the end, like, oh, you're out there. Well, they've kind of brought it more in to the golf portion, to the equipment portion of the show this year. I took an hour on Wednesday and got a lesson from Catherine Parento and Tyson McGuffin, two of the best pickleball players on the planet, like top five pickleball players, male and female. And, I mean, I've played some pickleball, but you can't turn down that opportunity if you're interested in learning about the game. They were wonderful. And experiences like that were coming back to the PGA Show. Hadn't been there the last few years. So I would say, as someone who works in the industry, I felt really encouraged and enthusiastic about what came out. I think as a recreational golfer, one of my concerns is the rising prices of everything in golf. I mean, golf is tremendously more expensive, it feels like, than pre-pandemic. And eventually that will start to come down a little bit, but I think there's a creep in some prices around, particularly around drivers and other equipment, that is just not going to go back the other way unless there's a serious contraction of the economy. And so far that doesn't appear to be taking shape. So on one hand, yeah, cool. Lots of people interested in golf, lots of golf business. That's awesome. On the other hand, if that makes the experience more expensive for everybody, eventually it's going to price out some of the people who took up the game because of COVID and some of the people who stuck around after it. That's a bit of a concern. But overall, a great show. really encouraging. And for me, it was especially encouraging on a variety of fronts, not just as a doing business. But I think we've talked about this on the show a little bit, but I'll give you more of an update. We are launching Golf News Net TV, and that'll be available on streaming platforms as a 24/7 linear style TV channel. So you'll be able to use Roku or Pluto TV or Vizio, Samsung, YouTube TV, like these types of streaming platforms where you can get a mixture of fresh original TV channels, some channels that just show 24/7 reruns of a show, mixture of those things. But we're going to be on those types of platforms. And so, obviously, I don't create 24 hours of content in a day. There's not enough of that to go around. And frankly, you wouldn't want any part of that. And I wanted to, like with the radio station, create partnerships with people who have video libraries, quality content, they're making shows already, and maybe they can bring them to our platform, not exclusive, and increase their audience, or be able to find a home for their 200 shows or 150 shows in their library that are timeless and evergreen, but they can't monetize otherwise, or they can't show to many people otherwise. Well, we can do something with that. We'll have a mixture of original content as well. We'll have live golf talk shows that will air during the weekdays. That'll simulcast on the radio station, so we'll be keeping up with the latest in golf headlines, the golf world, with different perspectives. Not just focused on the pro game, but focused on personality, what an individual prism through which they see into the world of golf. And I'm really excited about it, but part of putting all this together is finding the programming to make it happen. We have at GNN hundreds of hours of video, but you really need more like 1,000 or 2,000 hours of video to really get going. And so we're putting that together, and the excitement around that is really, really cool. It's from different people, right? There's different stakeholder type groups. So you've got people who are creating the content. Lots of those folks are interested. You've got people who could advertise with us, and they're interested too, albeit I don't have tons of information about that for a variety of reasons. We don't know all the final platform list, how much commercial inventory we control, kind of questions that are kind of important. Don't have the full answer to that yet. But also, from just people as consumers who are really excited about the idea of having a channel around golf that's built around recreational golf with pro golf components, right? I mean, that's kind of how Golf Channel used to be. They would show some pro golf, fair amount of it, and then they would have content that filled the buckets of instruction and travel and equipment and just golf lifestyle, stuff like that. Well, they have big contracts with every major tour, and they've got a lot of professional golf to show. It's hard for them to do that now. And NBC's investment or Comcast's investment in Golf Channel is different than it once was. Although we'll give a quick shout out to Matt Adams. We got to hang out at the PGA show. I hadn't seen him in person in a long time. His Fairways of Life program that he had been streaming online for, I think, like 3 years, 2-3 years by itself now, just got picked up by Golf Channel to be their morning show. It's just his show airing on Golf Channel, which is a great deal for him. I'm very happy for him. But content around golf is plentiful, and it's also simultaneously hard to find good quality content. There's lots of great stuff on YouTube, but the amount of bad instruction out there is unbelievable. And I think it's a different standard on TV versus on YouTube on your phone. There's a lot of personality-driven content that has lots of following. I mean, the Good Guys are a great example. They're probably 30, 40 other huge channels by size, by following. And they tend to make content for that style of consumption. And it's different. We're going to feature content that's more around television style. So I think there's room for everything. Probably come out, like I said, we'll soft launch probably about 6 weeks and get that going. And I'll give you more details about that as as I can make them available to you. I have some details, but not all of them. Not enough to give you a full announcement. Like I said, I've been waffling about telling people about it because I know it's coming, and that's an exciting thing unto itself, but I want to give people as much info as humanly possible. So we don't have that yet. We're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about kind of the state of play in the world of golf. Be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here for our first show of 2024. It has been, I think, quite a surprise for us to watch the PGA Tour so far this year. Had four tournaments, and we've had, now that we're going to talk about golf gambling here, but four triple-digit to one winners so far in the PGA Tour this season. Chris Kirk wins at the Century. I think he was 125, 150 to one. Grayson Murray wins. He was anywhere from 300 to 500 to one, depending on where you went and when you saw it before the tournament. At the Sony Open, wins in a playoff over Ben Ahn, who also would have been a longer shot, but he was strong at both season opening events. Keegan Bradley got in there as well in the playoff. Then you get Nick Dunlap, an amateur who was the first amateur to win in 33 years on the PGA Tour. He does that as a 300 to one shot, even though he's one of the best at the time amateur players in the world. Now he is signed with the PGA Tour, taking his membership. He's a professional golfer, and he's got so much opportunity in front of him because of that win. And then this past weekend, Matthew Pavon winds up winning at Torrey Pines. He got up and down for birdie on the final hole of the tournament to separate himself enough, which all he needs is one stroke to win over Nikolai Højgaard, who birdied the last after the fact after Pavon had made his, what was it, 8-footer, 9-footer to win the tournament. He was 125 to one, I think. And, you know, all that stuff being said, it's pretty remarkable, that kind of run to start the year, especially as long as I've been doing fantasy golf, golf picks, trying to model golf tournaments. I've never seen a run like this. And it's been about a decade of this. Never seen that. And it's, on one hand, it has to be frustrating for the tour. I mean, take Nick Dunlap aside, because he was an incredible story. But most people don't know Chris Kirk or Grayson Murray or Matthew Pavon. Not that they're not great stories. Chris Kirk is an incredible story unto himself. Overcame alcohol addiction, substance abuse. He, in Hawaii a year prior, saved his card with a major medical, with a top three finish in Sony, which then turns out to be the place where Grayson Murray, who has also battled alcoholism and substance abuse, wins for the first time on the PGA Tour. Less than a year after finally putting himself in a rehab and seeing the fruits of that right away. Then you have, obviously, Nick Dunlap, who, I mean, as long as you have parenthetical lowercase a after your name, there were going to be a lot of people who are going to watch with that kind of lead that he had going into the final round, shot, 60 to get into that position after day three, and then winds up winning the golf tournament with just a spectacular up and down. Unfortunate for Sam Burns to pump it into the water on 17, but even still, Dunlap had to get up and down because Christian Bezuidenhout perhaps unwittingly made an 8-10-foot birdie putt on his last hole, the group ahead, to wind up being the low professional, which turned out to be worth $1.512 million for him. But that could have forced a playoff had Dunlap, who very intelligently played away from the water, if he wouldn't have gotten up and down from not the easiest spot, but not the hardest spot, and just jams a 6-footer into the hole, wins, and becomes the first AM to win in 33 years since Phil Mickelson, which that's also kind of interesting given everything that's going on with Liv, that guy was the last amateur to win on the PGA Tour. And that's been overtaken in a moment where things might be changing again. And then last week, Matthew Pavon, who he birdied the last four holes of the season on the DP World Tour at the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. And that was enough to get him enough DP World Tour points to qualify for the next to last or last spot available for PGA Tour cards for players who finish high enough in their season-long points race. That got him to there. He played great coming out of the gate on the PGA Tour, winds up a winner. And now he is in all of the signature events for the remainder of the season. He's got a tremendous opportunity in front of him as well. And oh, by the way, the two tournaments that, well, really, I mean, even Sony was good. All four tournaments this year have been fantastic in terms of official world golf ranking, strength of schedule rating. So I'm looking at the OWGR website right now. I just kind of wanted to pull it up so you can see what the events this year have looked like on the PGA Tour. But Matthew Pavon got 55 points for winning the Farmers Insurance Open. Then the American Express, Nick Dunlap earned slightly more, 55.7 points in the end. So very similar. The best field the American Express has ever had. Very similar field at the Farmers Insurance Open in terms of quality of depth. You know, 22 of the world top 50 in both those events, basically. Sony Open, 48.9 points to Grayson Murray. They didn't have quite as many top 50 players, more like 50 or 20 of 50, but that was still way better than prior years, which has typically been like 12 or 13. And then the Century, you got 60 points to the winner, which they dock limited field events because bodies mean something to tournaments, and you still got 60 points to the winner. And this week, you're going to look at a very similar point total for Pebble Beach, probably closer to 65 points to the winner. That's pretty crazy. It's pretty awesome to have that kind of depth playing to start the year. Now, I'm sure as we move along, things will trickle a little bit down, especially as you get out of the run to the Masters. So there'll be a little bit at the end of February where we'll probably come down a little bit, but then you get all the way through the Florida swing. The fields should be sensational. Then you'll play after the Masters. That'll kind of dip a little bit because a lot of players will see that as an opportunity to take just a little rest. And then you'll have your runs where you have majors every 3 weeks. Leading after the PGA Championship into the U.S. Open, you've got Jack's Tournament, which is $20 million. You've got the U.S. Open, which is $20 million, and obviously the U.S. Open. And then you've got the Travelers after that, which is also $20 million. So June's crazy. You've got July with trips overseas, but after that, after the Open, you'll have a few weeks of reprieve for most players, you know, the top tier players, because there are no signature events in July. But for those players that are known stars that maybe have been struggling, well, they're going to go play 3M or Wyndham or Detroit, you know, those types of tournaments, because they're going to need the points, because only 70 players get in the playoffs now. So seemingly, so far, this system has worked. Now, it hasn't necessarily netted the best players winning everything, but eventually that will probably work itself out. That all said, on the DP World Tour, it's been the total opposite. You had Rory McIlroy win in Dubai after losing a heartbreaker to Tommy Fleetwood the week prior, also in Dubai. And then this past weekend, you had Torbjørn Olesen just crush the field. I think he won by 6 at the Ras Al Khaimah Championship, which is still in the UAE. It's a different emirate in the UAE. But that tournament didn't have any top 50 players. It was still pretty entertaining. And then on the LPGA, you had Lydia Ko win the first event in the Tournament of Champions after playing, frankly, a total skunk of last year, where she was not good in the LPGA. She played well in the LET event she played, the Saudi-backed ones that she played. She won the Saudi Women's International to start the year, and then that was it. Like, it was not good after that. And so she winds up getting a huge benefit, seemingly in confidence, from winning the Grant Thornton Invitational with Jason Day, the mixed team event at the end of the year. She stays in Orlando, decides to work on her game where she lives instead of going home, and she winds up winning the season opening tournament on her home club. Next week, they go to Bradenton, Florida, which was this past weekend. finds herself in a wacky final round where Nelly Korda should have really blown everyone away, but she has a struggle. Lydia takes advantage, hits this great second shot from a hanging lie on a par 5 17th, makes eagle, pars the last, looks like she's going to win, get the 27th point of her career, which would guarantee her entry to the LPGA Hall of Fame, which is points-based. It's almost impossible to get in. You have to have a truly one of the greatest of all time careers to even have an opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame. And then Nelly Korda wakes up, eagle 17, makes a swinging 15, 16 footer, whatever that putt was, to make eagle on 17. The only two players to eagle it all day are Ko and Korda. 18, she hits a drive just out of the fairway, wants a drop from a bad spot, doesn't get it. She thought it was a sprinkler head, I think. Winds up just hitting the green and it rolls out to a foot. Go to a playoff, two holes later, bang. Nelly Korda wins for the ninth time. What a great start there. And then on the Korn Ferry Tour, you had 19-year-old kid, Aldrich Puttgeiter, who's from South Africa, wins for the first time, the second of their events in the Bahamas. And then Jeremy Paul, kid from Germany, wins the first event. So some young guys coming through on the Korn Ferry Tour, which, by the way, we will have a show on GNN TV about the Korn Ferry Tour each and every week. We're going to do it with our friends at French Lick Resort out in Indiana because they are the new hosts for the next 5 years of the Korn Ferry Tour Championship season-ending event. They'll play it on the Dye course, so we'll be out there for that as well in October. But we're going to do a weekly show kind of highlighting the players who are on their path to French Lick and the Dye for this season. So very, very excited about that. It's been an interesting run so far to kind of catch up on the first month of the year because there are trends on each tour. And they are distinct and interesting. And I don't think they're anything what people expected, certainly on the PGA Tour. Maybe the other stuff kind of comes around in tracks. But, man, what's happened on the PGA Tour is absolutely bonkers to start the year. And, I don't expect it to continue. But, wow, that's pretty crazy stuff there. So, one thing I would do want to point out. You know what, we'll just do that in the next segment. We're going to kind of bring together what the heck's happening in the world of golf, not off the course. Everything related to LIV, PGA Tour, Strategic Sports Group, DP World Tour. We'll even throw in the LPGA and LET because now they're ensnared in this. It's all very interesting. We'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll talk about that right after this. All right, welcome back to the show for this week. And if I'm being totally transparent, we're recording the show on a Monday, so it's about 11:30 in the morning on Monday the 29th when we're doing this, and the reports are starting to kind of more trickle out, and they're really just aggregations of aggregations that Tyrrell Hatton is going to play on LIV in 2024, and that he's signed a deal or about to sign a deal somewhere in the area of $50 million. So he would join Jon Rahm, and supposedly Adrian Meronk is going to go play as well. He was the player of the year on the DP World Tour last year, and he's going to go take the money and go play on their circuit, even though he has a PGA Tour card, but frankly, that is what it is. It's not a paycheck, that's an opportunity. So we'll have some clarity, you would presume, around who's actually going to play on LIV this year. And I think this is a fascinating story because we are 4 days away as we're recording this from the first LIV tournament of their third season. Now, they like to say it's their second season. It's their third. But they have not really announced much of anything about their tour this year. Now, they have announced player movement among their teams. None of that seems genuine because there's no way in your right mind you would trade, if it meant anything, Taylor Gooch away from your team to the team with Brooks Koepka on it. You wouldn't do that if that mattered, right? Like, that's kind of weird. So that bit of it's a little bit of a farce, but that's fine. And they have really no announcements to make about the nature of the format this year. Supposedly they're going to be 54 players, 13 teams of four, and two quote-unquote wild cards that don't belong to a team and can just, I guess, float or Monday qualify, or I'm not sure. But they haven't explained all that yet. And the reason you would do 54 is for the math, 18 times 3, instead of having 52, which would be really, whatever. Do what you got to do. But so you've got, you know, potentially a 52-player roster, 54-player roster. We don't even know who all is on Rahm's team. You would presume if Hatton signs, he goes to Rahm's team. But then you got to put two more players in there. You had your Q-School guys from your kind of sort of strange Q-School style event. But you have those guys. They're signed on teams. Who's left? Like, how does that get all worked out? Why don't we know this, but four days out? And what does not knowing this 4 days out tell us? And I think it tells us a couple of things. One, I don't think we're that close to a deal. Now, I would have said on December 6th, when the Rahm thing got announced, this was the Saudis' way of trying to compel the attention of the PGA Tour and get them to the table to make a deal. And I think that was the point. And I'm pretty sure Rahm thought that was the point, too. Rahm spoke the talking points and all that stuff because he has to. But I'm pretty sure he signed for the money thinking there will be a deal soon. He had probably heard some skeleton version of the deal and figured in 1 to 2 years, he'd play this tour. He still has access to the four majors, of course. And he would be able to come back to the PGA Tour or whatever was next scot-free, basically. He'd take the money, go play this thing, hope it didn't ruin his game and career, and call it a day. Well, now it doesn't seem like that's the case. Because, and I have to admit, at the start of the year, I thought that was the case as well. I thought we were close to a deal. And I've talked about it on the daily podcast that I do, which is Two Off the First. And I got that sensation from the way Rory McIlroy was talking about the sketches of a world golf tour. And that other people were weighing in on that. The Keith Pelley, who is now walking away from this job as the CEO of the European Tour Group on April 2nd, that he outlined that. Like, hey, that's what I think it should be too. And some selfish motivation behind that for them both, of course. But that seemed to kind of be, all right, well, we're prepping you for what's coming here. That there could be some team golf a couple months of the year. That there could be a change in the focus of the schedule, that there could be an upper echelon schedule that's different, all that type of stuff. But now I get the sense that that's not the case, because I get the sense that LIV is putting their season together while they're flying the plane, quite literally flying the plane to Mayakoba, because they don't have their 52 players or 54 players all announced yet. Seemingly they're signing one of them today, and whatever they get for the otherwise, that seems quite unknown to have an additional team and only have one guy on it right now. Especially because if Adrian Meronk signs, or did sign, or whatever, he's already known to be going to go play on the Cleeks team. That's the thought about that. So it seems to me they don't have a specific idea of how this is all going to work out. They're going to figure it out based on who they can sign and when they can sign them. And they have a hard deadline 4 days from now to figure that out. And I'm willing to wager that LIV and the Saudis kind of figured if a deal was going to happen, there are a couple of different soft deadlines. And this is one of them, the start of the LIV season. Because if they have a deal that's announced, then they could just play the LIV season, not as a farce, but as the way they've been playing it. Go play 12 teams of four, 48 players. You could shift Rahm around, whatever. It would be fine. Rahm's got the money. They could do that. But it sounds like they're not going to do that. Well, why aren't they going to do that? They must think it's not going to work out, or something's not working out, or something's not going right, and that they need to figure out how to establish a product now. And that's why they're going to go and spend another $50 million. Supposedly, and all of those estimates are usually way off, but let's just say $50 million for argument's sake, on Tyrrell Hatton. Okay. Well, for what? Are more people going to watch? I don't think so. I mean, we'll find out. I don't get the sense that's going to happen, at least here in this country. Maybe. But I get the sense that they think maybe this thing isn't going to come together. Maybe what's going to happen is something we've talked about here on the show, is that they would ultimately, the PGA Tour, make a deal with an American-based investor group. And that American-based investor group is called Strategic Sports Group, which is led by Fenway Sports Group, a bunch of North American sports owners. They've got deep pockets, got big assets. They could throw a lot of money at the PGA Tour. They want to own all of sports. Well, here you go. Here's another one. If they make that deal, and the reporting from a sports business outlet called Sportico, where that could be announced this week. Well, the tour could then go and say, and we've talked about this, is what they would do. They'd make the deal with Strategic Sports Group and then go to the Saudis and go, all right, here's the deal we've made with them. You want in or not? And if you don't want in, well, we've got them. We don't necessarily need you. That would be their next posture. And it's a back and forth of posturing in different ways. Ron was posturing from the Saudis. Hey, we could poach your best guy or one of your best guys. We got him. Now, what do you want to do? PGA Tour comes to the table and says, well, I don't know if you guys know, but we've got an outside investor group that wants to be on this. And they'll probably put in as much as you're willing to put in, if not more. And that was the next line. And now there's been this reporting that you've had Jay Monahan and Yasser Al-Rumayyah meeting in person for the first time since they hashed out whatever they did last May 30th, and announced on June 6th. Well, how'd that go? We didn't get any reports, no trickle out, no anything about, well, it went really well, it should be really close, even though the guy was like the former CEO of Ticketmaster or something reporting, oh, everyone should look out, you know, the deal's coming soon. Well, as we've talked about, the deal wasn't with the Saudis. The deal's with the American-based interest. That's going to happen first, and then whatever happens, happens. So where are we at in all of this? I get the sense that an imminent deal is not there with the Saudis. For better or for worse, that's where it seems to be. And that's why LIV is still scrambling to try to get players to sign massive contracts to play a league that a lot of us probably figured early last summer or last June, and certainly December 6th, may not even be a thing in 2 years, or may look completely different as a thing in 2 years. Well, here we are. Meanwhile, the LPGA and the Ladies European Tour have been thrown into this because the LPGA and the LET were going to merge. Players wanted it. Executives wanted it. It was going to happen because it made a lot of sense for the LET. The LET has been saved in the pandemic by its relationship with the LPGA, and that tour struggles to develop a bigger schedule. Saudis, through Aramco, have a team series. I believe it's four events, and then they have the Saudi Women's International, which is a $5 million event. So they have something like $13 million of total prize money on the LET schedule. And apparently, the Saudis came in at the last minute before this vote that was supposed to happen last fall, and this is according to the Telegraph. I totally believe this. James Corrigan does not miss, typically. And the Saudis came in and said, you know, we want to review this deal. We may pull our sponsorship if you merge with the LPGA. And all of a sudden, the LET withdrew the vote. They weren't going to have it because they knew that if the players voted as everyone thought they were going to, that the Saudis would pull $13 million of sponsorship on a tour where the otherwise average purse is somewhere in the area of $250,000 to $300,000. So they didn't say they were going to do more business with the Ladies European Tour, and why they care at all about their $13 million investment with the LPG or the LET, I don't understand. They just did it because they could have someone under their thumb. They don't need to spend a lot of money to have someone under their thumb related to the Ladies European Tour. They do related to the PGA Tour. Lots more money out there. So it's about control. And limiting a partnership that frankly would be better that it went through. And that's really unfortunate. So what that means, I don't know for that merger, whether it'll happen eventually, but it's not happening now. And that means this other stuff's got to get worked out. It is all a mess and it stinks. And it, the worst part of all of that is it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. And because it's not going to go away, that means we're going to have to deal with more stuff like this. And on one hand, obviously that's stuff to talk about. And I do have a strong amount of intrigue in all of this because it's a story about people and decisions and business. But it's also a huge disruption to the world of professional golf. And it's seemingly going to continue based on the track of everything that's happening this moment. And of course, 48 hours from now or less, you could have everything worked out. But it almost seems right now the point is to not have it worked out. And that's a bummer. All right, we'll go ahead and take a break. We'll be back with Joe Franken from Putcheck right after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for your support on the first show of the year. It's great to have you with us this week. Joe Franken's our guest. He is the CEO of Putcheck. And Putcheck is a next generation version of miniature golf. It's got a little bit of everything. Has miniature golf, has 36 holes at their facilities. They have world-class food and beverage operation. So it doesn't matter what your group size is, whether your makeup of it is friends and family, just family, just you and your kids. Whether you're there for a buddy's night, you're there to watch a game, whatever it turns out to be. But any time of day when they're open, they have something for you at a putt shack. And on top of that, you get to play mini golf with a next generation piece of equipment and a golf ball that can track your every single shot and every single element, keeps score for you. It is fantastic. So I wanted to talk to Joe about that experience running putt shack, trying to build memorable experiences like this for golf consumers and non-golf consumers alike, and trying to compete in a space where you're competing against the folks like Topgolf out there in the golf world, but also other indoor experiential things that have nothing to do with golf, and see kind of how it all comes together for them into one individual experience that's consistent across the country. So please enjoy this conversation with Joe Franken of Putcheck.
Joe Franken's our guest. He is the CEO of Putcheck, and Putcheck is a golf experience not too dissimilar from miniature golf or miniature golf, but with a whole lot more fun involved, a lot more interactivity involved. And they are rapidly expanding around the country. So I wanted to have Joe on to kind of talk about the business, the experience, and what might be coming to a neighborhood near you not too long from now. So Joe, thanks for being with us. First of all, for folks who are not familiar, can you give the vibe, the idea of Putt Shack to people for those who haven't experienced it?
Sure. And Ryan, thank you very much for having me. Sure. Putt Shack is the world's only tech-infused miniature golf. Right? So what I mean is the inventors of the game stepped back and said, okay, you know, miniature golf has been around for 100 years, but it really hasn't changed in 100 years. How can we reinvent this game? So they went about that by putting a bunch of technology inside the golf ball. So essentially inside every Putcheck golf ball is a mini iPad. And what they've been able to accomplish by doing that is creating the ability to track the ball on every inch of every hole and also allow for automatic scoring. So you no longer use a paper and pencil and kind of try to remember how many strokes everything took. But the other part to that is it really allows the guests to be completely engaged within the game. So essentially what we now have the ability to do is by reinventing the game, you're trying to get the highest score possible as opposed to the lowest score possible. All of our holes are really designed for our core demographic, which is that 21 to 39 year old. So you'll have a beer pong hole. You'll have a roulette hole. We have a pop the question hole, which is like a trivia pursuit hole. And so you'll get a true false question that'll pop up. If you think the answer is true, you putt under a bridge that says true. If you think it's false, you putt under a bridge that says false. If you get it right, you get bonus points. If you get it wrong, you lose points. So the technology enables us to track every inch that the ball travels on every hole, which also means that if you try to cheat by picking up your ball and moving it, the system will know that and give you a penalty stroke as well. So it's a really fun, it's a great engaging game. But the other part that we've done is we've combined that with an upscale casual dining food and beverage offering. So, you know, I can describe Putt Shack to a lot of people that it's in, you know, it's a really upscale build out and design. But, you know, I mean, when people have played the same game since they were kids, they walk in thinking they're going to see pirate ships and windmills. Well, you're not going to see that in Putt Shack. You're also not going to see food coming out on a plastic basket. So the food and beverage offering that we have is designed by a French trained executive chef. We do a lot of shareables because people tend to come in groups. So you'll have, you know, some classics like sourdough flatbreads, but you'll also find some things in there like grilled octopus and lamb skewers. And so we have food flavors from around the globe. It's incredible food combined with incredible signature cocktails, right? You know, and in today's day and age, we spend as much time coming up with signature cocktails that you can't get anywhere else as we do signature dishes. So it's really combining that. The great thing about miniature golf is everybody can play, right? So it spans multi-generations. We have a lot of families that will come during the day, on weekends and in the summertime. We do a lot of corporate events during the day. We do a lot of social events in the evening. And then after 8 o'clock, our venues turn into 21 and older venues. So when you come during the day, you have this nice family feel, you know, kind of ideal for corporate events. In the evening, it's an upscale nightclub feel, right? So you have DJs playing, the lighting changes, everything changes to, you know, really cater to that demographic that's really looking for a night out that's going to have fun, that's, you know, different than just going to a bar or different than going to a casual dining restaurant.
Kind of connecting with that 21 to 39 age group. I'm just outside of that. I'm almost 41, but I can still feel some tether to that age group. For those of us in kind of that age group, and I can't speak for everybody, but I felt like a lot of people my age probably played miniature golf, the old school version of miniature golf on a beach vacation or, you know, a holiday away. And they maybe connect that with that vibe, with that memory of time with their family or friends or whatever on vacation. Is there kind of an intentional effort to try to connect some of those experiences to what people experience in Putt Shack?
Yeah, I think naturally, you know, I mean, again, I'm past your age, so I'm even farther outside of our core demographic. But I have three kids that are right in the heart of our core demographic. And the great thing about whether I'm going with my wife or coming with our adult kids, you have those memories from when they were younger or when you were younger. But now you're actually bringing it in, and it's fitting in as an adult, right? It now creates this thing that's very familiar that you really enjoy doing, but it's creating new memories in a fun game as an adult, right? And the game can be played, you know, I mean, you can decide how competitive you want to play the game, right? You can either be, you know, I mean, if you know, you're coming with your kids, you know, you can play it as a nice family. If you're coming with a bunch of guys and you're all uber competitive, you can play it as an uber competitive event. And, you know, our goal is really trying to activate all the senses so that, you know, you're in a Putt Shack and you are just totally immersed within the game. It is amazing when you're not keeping score. You don't even have to think about it. And then every time you go to the next hole, it kind of pulls up your leaderboard with your group of where everybody sits. You know, how far behind are you? And because you're trying to get the highest point possible and you can get bonus points, it really kind of changes the whole dynamic. But then it's all that music, the smell of the foods, the drinks. It's really trying to activate all of your senses so that when people are there, if you're spending 2.5 hours at Putt Shack, you walk out. Our goal is that you know, all of the squirrels that were running in your head, you know, the stresses of every day just kind of melt away. You've been engaged with all your friends. You've created the not only an experience, but hopefully memories that come with it. And you walk out going, you know what, that was worth every dollar that I spent in that with that experience.
I mean, even just as a parent of two kids that are under 12, just not having to watch them and simultaneously take the pencil and scorecard out on every hole, that is an added convenience, but also, like you said, a little bit more immersive, makes you connect a little bit more with them than worrying about what in God's name they're going to do on the next hole. And that keeps you a little bit together for longer. I like that idea, and to make it a little bit more people-focused.
And each one of our venues has 4 9-hole courses as our typical layout. All right, so it's a pretty big footprint. It's, you know, an average venue is 25,000 square feet. So, you know, you have to come multiple times before you've ever played all of the holes once. And then what I find people doing is, you know, similar to if you're a golfer where you go back to the same course, you go, okay, now I know this hole. Now I know the best way to play this hole. Right? People do that the same way with Putt-Shack. It's like, okay, well, now I know how to play the beer pong hole, right? Now I know how to play this particular hole where I have the best chance of scoring bonus points or avoiding the hazards, right? The sand traps, as it were, so that you can really enjoy it.
How much of the Putt-Shack experience is continuous from Putt-Shack to Putt-Shack, and how much of is it geographic focused? Is there a difference between, you know, one locale from the other, Midwest to East Coast, et cetera?
No, it's pretty consistent. I mean, we when you walk in to any Putt-Shack around the country, you definitely know that you've walked into a Putt-Shack, right? The signature branding that we have is very consistent. The holes that we have, while, you know, depending on the footprint that we have to work with, it may not be the exact same 9 holes on that you played in Chicago as if you were going to play in Dallas. But the holes will be the same. We have now, I believe it's over 30 unique holes, right? We duplicate a couple that we know that people really like a lot on a couple of courses. And then most of our food menu is the same, although we have some localized dishes within every market. So we have an item on our food menu called our tailpipes, and those are tailored really to the market that we're in. So our chef will create, like, if it's in Boston, it's lobster mac and cheese. In Chicago, that is a hot beef spring roll with jardiniere in it, right? So it's tailored to the specific market. We do this similar where we'll have a localized flatbread that will go with the market. So, you know, in Nashville, it's actually a chicken, waffle chicken, which I was thinking was not going to taste good, but it actually tastes amazing.
Chicken waffles are awesome. You gotta know that. So, you know, trying to kind of compete in a market where you're dealing with lots of different experiential things coming out of COVID. I feel like people are trying to get back toward having experiences, having a good time, living life, kind of, you know, making those memories again for maybe making up for lost time. But there are lots of different experiences out there. How can Putt-Shack, or how does Putt-Shack stand out in a community of different types of experiences where families or singles or whoever are trying to pick what to do on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah. So I think for us, you know, when we look at creating Putt-Shack and say, okay, well, what's going to create the long-term success of Putt-Shack? So it's not some place that people go to once and go, hey, that was fun, but, you know, I don't need to go again either ever, or I'll come back in 3 years, right?
Yeah.
For us, really, we thought it's a combination of three things that we call the triple threat. One is a really fun and compelling game that people enjoy playing and they want to come back to time and time again, and has some barrier of entry. So, you know, if it's a bowling alley, somebody can't open another bowling alley right across the street, which, you know. And so for us, the technology within the golf ball is patented technology. So the only place that you can play Puttshack is at a Puttshack. And we own that technology on a global basis. So one, we know what we invest in making it better and better. Nobody else can just duplicate and open up across the street. The second part is a really fun and compelling game is great, but guests expect a lot more today than they did 10, 15 years ago. And so it was really important to us that the food and beverage offering be as good as any casual dining experience that they have the opportunity to choose from. Right? So our view is when people are going out and we're trying to capture, you know, their discretionary entertainment dollars, they may go, hey, we want to go to the movie theater, or, you know, what else can we do? And, you know, might be casual dining. And what we want is our food and beverage offering to be as good as whatever standalone casual dining restaurant that people can go and choose from. The third component, which I think is kind of lost a lot these days, is really the guest service experience. How our associates can tie together drinks on the course and the game experience and interacting with our guests to really tie it all together to create the memories that I think people are really looking for. And our view is if we do those three things well, people don't have to pick Puttshack every time they want to go out. But as long as we're in the, you know, that decision set of, hey, what do you want to do tonight? And we're mentioned and we deliver on our kind of those three things of the triple threat, they'll come back to us multiple times a year. And the great thing about the game being based in technology is we can continue to innovate the game through software, right? Which nobody else can do unless you want to physically change your entire hole. We don't have to do that. We can change the game through changing software. And we've also we opened our Dallas location in December. We launched a new product called the Puttshack Challenge Hole, which is a standalone hole where you can now eat, drink, and play all in one location. And then we have six different games that you play. So, you know, you can play the game, you can play Duck Hunt as an example now with miniature golf. So the ducks come across the screen and you're putting the ball to try to knock them out, right? So that is a really fun, you know, again, it's just a way that we can look and say, okay, utilizing and maximizing technology, how can we create fun ways that people can play miniature golf? And you know, again, for the game itself, it creates another opportunity of a fun way to introduce the game of golf to people of all ages, because miniature golf spans generations. You can play it at 7, you can play it at 77.
Back in my NBC Sports days, and I forget which executive said this, so I'm sorry to whoever's listening about this, but they used to say, you know, one of our goals, content creation-wise, was to get the website that we were making each day to be in someone's top five. The thing that when you took a break at lunch, you would open a tab on your browser, and that was one of the five websites you went to with your 15-minute break, your 30-minute break. And that kind of sounds like what you're describing in a way with your entertainment choices. It's impossible to be number one every time, but if you're in that top five, you're going to get that repeat business that you want.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if we can get people to come back 3-4 times a year, it's great. And, you know, our venues, and I think one of the things that's unique about what we've seen, and we have, you know, 15 locations. We have 11 in the U.S. We have 4 in the greater London area. And then we'll be opening another 7 locations in 2024. So if we're not in your market, we hope to be there as soon as possible. But our average venue does between 350 and 400,000 visitors a year, right? So there's a lot of people that come through, and there's a lot of people that keep coming back because it's fun, it's different, it's unique, and every time you come is a different experience.
Yeah, that's an interesting part about it too, that while you have 36 holes, you get different experiences among those. You can also experience Puttshack with different groups. I mean, I could bring my wife and kids. I could bring my wife for just a date night. I could go with buddies to tear it up as a competition, a dude's night out. I mean, there are three or four different ways with different sets of people I can experience it, and it will be fundamentally different.
The other good thing is you can go online and make your game reservation, and you can also make a dining reservation, right? So it's not like you walk in and go, okay, well, you know, how long is the wait to be able to play? You know, if you want to play at 7 o'clock, you make a game reservation for 7 o'clock. And if you want to eat afterwards, then you make a dining reservation. And the good thing about the technology is we know on a Friday night approximately how long it's going to take you to play the game. So that if you're playing at 7 o'clock, we know, you know, about what time you're going to be coming off that course and make sure that your dining table is ready.
And that speaks to what you talked about earlier, that quality of experience, that the crispness of it, to make sure that the hiccups are at a minimum and that you walked out thinking nothing went wrong at all. Everything went right.
That's the goal, right? That's the brand goal.
I'll kind of end on this. You know, the golf industry has talked so much in kind of coming out of COVID and because of COVID that more people are involved in golf or playing traditional golf or golf adjacent activities, whether that's a putt shack, a top golf, I mean, you know, driving range, whatever that is. From your perspective, what's the best way that golf as a game or an industry can hang on to those people and keep them involved in the sport in whatever capacity that is, 3-5 years from now?
Sure. My answer to that is the sport of golf is a lot of fun in many ways to different people in different ways. I think what some of the off-course opportunities to play the sport has done is expanded the appeal to people who either would be intimidated going on a traditional golf course. It's the one sport where, you know, if you're going to play in a traditional way, you know, there's a ton of rules. The equipment is expensive. Like if you walked in to, you know, a golf course and say, okay, I've never played this game, what do I do? You know, chances are they may just say, yeah, you might want to go somewhere else.
Right.
And I think what things like Putt Shack and Top Golf and, you know, a couple of others have done is created this non-threatening fun way to be introduced to the sport. Right. So if you're coming to Putt Shack, either as an adult who's never been introduced to the game, right, you're playing in a really fun way that you may go, you know what, I want to learn how to play this more. Right. So maybe I'll actually go learn how to swing a club and go try out Top Golf. And then maybe I'll go to a par three. Or if, you know, you're bringing your family for the first time and you have young kids, right? It's a fun way to introduce the sport. I think Putt Shack and the good thing about putting within the game of golf is, you know, when even on a traditional course, you know, you putt for money, right?
Yeah,
that's where everything seems to be won and lost, right? And so it's a fun way to kind of introduce it. And it's the easiest way to play the sport, right? Because everybody knows how to putt. Everybody can, you know, if you've never picked up a golf club before, you can have a fun time playing miniature golf. And we've created this fun way to do it, where everything is kind of done for you and all you have to do is enjoy the holes that you're playing with, you know? So I think it's great. I think it's great overall as a fun experience, but I also think anytime that you create ways to introduce the sport or continue to enhance people playing the sport outside of the traditional way is just good for the sport in general.
Jim Brankin, thanks for being here with us. For folks who are interested, head to puttshack.com, find a location near you. You can make, as Joe said, your reservation online, or golf, or your dining, full experience. You show up and then you get to do it, which is very handy and dandy. I appreciate that as well. So, Joe, thanks for being with us. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate you having me.
You can find interviews like this as well. They are on two different places as podcasts. We have a podcast called GNN Radio Buttercuts. This is kind of our best interviews and segments that we do with other people. You can listen to that as its own podcast. You can also listen to this on our golf business specific podcast, which is called Green Shoots. That's available, both of them, anywhere you get your podcasts. But you can find the whole directory of shows that we have on GNN Radio at golfnewsnet.com/GNN-radio. All right. We will be back next week. We got the year underway. We will have plenty to talk about, I'm sure, next week. I get the feeling this week is going to be a total mess. We'll talk about that a little bit, talk about some other stuff. If you want to get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. On Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky, @RyanBallenge. There was an impersonating Ryan Ballenge. That's the first time it's ever happened in my life. Ryan_Ballenge. That got deleted from X this morning, so thankfully that all got worked out. But no multiple me's anymore on X. I'm sure it'll happen somewhere else somehow. Now that's happened once, but anyhow. All right, we'll be back with the show next week. Thanks so much for your support. Looking forward to a great year talking golf with you once again here on the 19th Hole Golf Show. See you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.